I think the American conception is a construction. It's something, it's a way that we have constructed the world to work. Like property and ownership is just a matter of contracts. And I have agreed that this is your house now.
Yeah.
It used to be mine, but I've agreed now that it's yours. And like the contracts should reflect reality, right? I think contracts are fine. But like the way we view property is merely contractual, where like the social contract is that the public has agreed and this foundation has agreed that this park is for public use. And like that's why we can use it. Otherwise, it would be trespassing. You know, whereas like it just makes sense that actually a really great example would be like, is it against the law for a dog, your neighbor's dog, to poop in your yard?
It's against the law of my house, brother. How about like it just, is it against the law for me to pump your dog full of hot lead for taking a dump on my yard? Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast that is recorded into a bottle and thrown out to sea to be discovered in the future. It's your boy, Ethan.
And I'm Patrick. The Crunch is a podcast where Ethan and I sit down and have a conversation about a Catholic topic and goof off. We hope that more people have conversations like this, and we're happy you're here. Thanks for joining us.
I would Ethan, like to...
How was your day?
I want to put a message in a bottle, and I want to cast it out to sea. I have a problem. I have a bit of an affinity for the sea man, right?
I'm going to leave.
Guys like this. These are my kind of guys. And I'm... What did you just say?
You just lobbed one up for me.
What did you say?
You're like, I have an affinity for seamen.
And I said... It doesn't matter what I said. I know who I am, and you can't take that away from me. I yearn for the ocean. I yearn for the high seas.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I'm in the landlocked state.
You really are. Your and land I is think, locked, dude.
I think the way to solve this is to buy a boat.
We can't steal someone else's gimmick.
I'm not trying to steal James McCann's joke, because I'm not trying to live on the boat. I'm not trying to make a whole podcast about buying a boat. I'm just letting you know
that you that want for a me, boat.
For me to be happy, I think I'm going to need a boat. Just a rental, even like a timeshare boat that I get for an hour on Tuesday night. You know?
They do have those. They have, near me, they have boat rentals where you pay a certain premium and you can rent a boat on any day except for like blackout days. And then if you want to rent the boat on blackout days, you can pay an extra premium. So like, you can't take the boat out on Labor Day, right?
On the 4th of July.
They fill up. 4th of July, yeah.
Yeah.
And so those exist, but mostly in seafaring communities like ours. The harbor, Melbourne, the harbor city.
I live right next to a lake, so I think I could make this happen. Does the boat rental come with a sort of like a crew? Like, could I get also a crew?
I actually don't know. That's a good
maybe
question.
A first. I would first mate. I need someone to swab.
I need an ensign, a yeoman, a boatswain,
a coxswain.
I played a computer game when I was a kid. I don't remember what the name of it was, but the ranks of. You would go up in rank, and the ranks were like the ranks on a boat. I don't remember what the computer game was called, but that
old computer game, Boat Ranks, Hydro Thunder. No, that was a racing game. That was a racing game where it was on the Namco 100th anniversary, and one of the names of the boats was called Damn the Torpedoes. And I didn't know that that was like an actual term, right? Like that's what it was called when you put the torpedoes in their little cubby hole. Was called Damning the Torpedoes. And my brother would always pick that boat, and it made me uncomfortable because I was a wee little child, and I told on him to my mom. I was like, Mom, Alex keeps picking Damn the Torpedoes in Hydro Thunder, and he should get in trouble because that's a bad word. And she had to explain to me that I actually didn't know anything about boats and that I was actually stupid. So that's where I got that from.
Was it the Secret of Monkey Island?
It could have been the Secret of Monkey Island.
That's a good candidate.
Yeah.
For Monkey Mondays. One
for with what's his name? You can play as him in Star Wars: The Force Unleashed. Guybrush Threepwood? Was that a good pull?
No,
Did I get that right?
I do not think The Secret of Monkey Island was the game that I'm thinking of. Man, okay. this is gonna bug me.
I know. If any of you out there know about the game that Patrick played with the boats and the ranking system, was it Sid Meier's Pirates?
I don't think so.
Okay. You never know.
It was like a children's computer game.
I want to rent a boy to live on the boat, and I need 18. You're a lad, I guess. Not a child, but somewhere between a boy and a man, you know.
mid-20s.
Someone who has enough life experience to know when a paying gig is good and not enough life experience to know that this is going to be the worst time of his life. That's what I want. And I want him to get a little mop, and I want him to swab the deck. And I need you to stop looking at your phone so that we can talk about the pirate ship that I'm trying to build. If you don't find it in the next 10 seconds, I'm ending this podcast, and you're going to have to try and reschedule.
I think it was a Jumpstart game. It was like the same company that did those like
Pajama Sam.
Did you have that? I closed my laptop door.
Okay.
Did you have that in school where at the end of the year they would do like a sales pitch? Like Jumpstart would be like, hey, keep your brain active over the summer. Here's this package that you can buy. Mm-hmm. And it's a computer game and a bunch of workbooks. Did you have that?
Not that I remember. I remember my mom making us do workbooks over the summer, which was...
That was
infuriating. That's
absolutely
crazy.
Ridiculous.
I get told that I'm stupid about boats, and then I have to do my multiplication tables afterwards.
There was Jumpstart had one for every grade, and we got pitched on it at the end. But like, you're telling me, I'm in third grade. I don't have a wallet, you know?
Right.
But I'm like, I high key want this because it's really shiny and red and
it's in a video
red
game.
And yellow. Yeah. You know, it's like it's the colors that make you want to eat. And I'm just like, let's go. Like, I want this so bad, and I never got it.
It's not a very good sales pitch because they're not really selling to the decision maker, as it were.
You're telling me.
They're banking on the child being so desperate. This is their sales strategy. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get these kids hyped up. We're going to release amphetamines through a gas in the air, and it'll go into the room. And we're going to pitch them on this video game, and we're going to slide in some workbooks as well. And then we're going to tell them how much it costs, $15. And then because they're so high on these drugs that we've pumped in, like the Minoxapuff gas in that episode of Drake and Josh, then they're going to go home high as a kite, and they'll be like, Mom, I got to have the game.
I got to get my brain stimulated over this summer.
I got to get this game. And also, there's bugs inside my skin, Mom. I don't know what to do. You got to get the game to get the bugs out of my skin. And then they buy it. That's their plan.
Yeah.
When in reality, you could just like send an email to like the parents.
That never
be a lot simpler. No. Well, they didn't have email back when you were in school, back in the day.
How old do you think we both are?
I know that you're older than me.
You're older than me.
Yep. Nope. I was talking to a Focus missionary today, and they said, we make fun of this guy on our team. He's the old guy on the team. He was born in 1999.
Dang.
And I about jumped out of a first story window.
That's painful. Yeah. It's starting. Yeah,
it's coming.
How are we still the youngest podcasters? That's what I want to know.
Everyone's afraid of us. They're in awe of us.
We're going to be 30, and we're going to be the
youngest still
going to
be the young podcast. My thought is that everyone younger than us is so afraid of getting canceled or being labeled as problematic or being labeled as someone that's trying to be famous that they just won't do it.
I think that might be true. I also think that the bar of entry is higher than when we started.
The bar of entry is as low as it's ever been, Patrick. You can pick up your phone and you can start a six-figure business right here on your cell phone.
No, the bar is still higher because the bar the bar is so low.
Okay. Make it make sense.
Everybody has a phone in their pocket that can record, and so everyone knows what an iPhone recording looks like. And so if you just have an iPhone recording, it's like, all right, this guy isn't trying, you know.
I suppose, but you would think that more people would despite that, more people would try than not try if they have the means available to them. No?
Maybe that's true. Well, I mean, but this is what we see. How many people are trying? Maybe you're listening to this and you're like us 10 years ago or 5 years ago. We haven't been doing that long. We're like, no, pay attention to us. We're doing something. We have a sort of a following. If so, DM us.
Don't.
What, you don't want to be DM'd?
I don't want anyone.
My DMs are closed, actually.
Are they really?
Yeah. I
DM you.
Yeah, they're not closed to you.
Oh, thank you. That's nice.
Did Elon fix the thing?
You didn't
respond
to my... Hold on. You cut out for a second.
Elon fixed the thing where you used to be able the rules for DMing people you didn't follow used to be like if their DMs were open, but mm-hmm. for verified users there was an opening where any verified user could DM any verified user, which makes sense.
I forgot about that
because verification was like a thing. Mm-hmm. But then for like a brief month, mm-hmm. it wasn't. And every verified user was like, everybody's paying $8 to DM me. This is insane. And so I never got to take advantage of that. People were like going for, you know, I want to DM whoever's popular at the time. Who was popular at the time? I would have just DM'd Matt Maher. Been like, hello, Matt Maher.
Who's
Matt Maher?
I mean, I know who Matt Maher is, but now, like, what is he up to now? Is he still
That's
kind
exactly
of,
why I would DM him. Be like, hey, what are you up thing? To?
Yeah, what are you doing now? Are you still kind of, your grace is, are you still doing that? Is that your thing? Wow. It's crazy.
Shut up. You should come to my parish. Do a little concert.
Someone, I was in a meeting with my team, and everybody's in Dallas, and I'm here. And someone was like, oh, look, that's Cooper Ray. And I was like, wow, that's a blast from the past. Did you ever see Cooper Ray?
I saw Cooper Ray at a Steubenville conference recently. And it was
really?
The first time I'd ever heard of him. Yeah.
Yeah. He was in the office that like my team was meeting in for some reason, just walking around. And only one person knew who he was. And I was like, oh,
Why was he there? Was he doing a talk?
Presumably to get some work done, nice. You know, use the co-working space. Maybe he was getting a little coffee, you know.
I tend to do that in my co-working
people like to go to the co-working spaces, get a little coffee.
It's true. I get too much little coffee and then I have to go to the big doctor, get a big EKG.
Oh no.
And then get charged $180. Do you know how much it costs to get
every time you go get a medical thing done, you complain to me about how much it costs. Buddy, you live in America. This is what it is. I need you to accept this.
I should have been a doctor. I should have gone to medical school.
The problem was is that you didn't have Asian or sub-Asian parents. That was the problem.
That is the problem. That is the problem. But man, I was like doing some math, all right? Because
about being a
doctor. Primary care visits are covered by your insurance. Right. So like,
I don't know anything, but my insurance does.
And so this guy, like I was asking, I had an appointment, primary care, first visit. He comes in, he says, hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so. Do you need a note for work? And I go, no, because I'm an adult, you know, even if I did need a note for work, I would simply not turn one in.
I would. Yeah. What are you going to do? Fire me?
Absolutely crazy. Anyway,
man who was
so
fired.
He said, I was like, what is this? And I said, hello. And he said, okay, go to the wall and turn around. And I said, not that yet, doc. I'm not that old. Not doing that yet. And then he made me do a sobriety test. And then he poked my stomach. And then he put a stethoscope on my chest.
He did a sobriety test. Hold on. Did you have to do the ABCs backwards? Did you have to walk on a line?
Yeah, he said, say the ABCs backwards. And I went, A, B, C, D. Uh-huh. And I was immediately put in prison. Uh-huh. No, he made me do like walk in a straight line.
And then he just poked you in the stomach?
Yeah, all of the, it doesn't really, I don't even remember what all the tests
like
were.
Like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yeah, and I went, hee, hee, hee. But he did a bunch of tests and the test spanned maybe 3 minutes and then he left. Never. and then he was like, so-and-so will be back to take care of you. And I was like, great. And so she like was like, all right, all done. That's good. The doctor didn't recommend anything. So you're good. And they're like, see you in a year. And I was like, man. I walk outside. I was like, how often does he do this? She was like, it's like all day. That's all he does, 15 minutes at a time. She's like, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. So if like someone is like 5 minutes late, it throws off the entire day. She's like, yeah, he hates it when people are late. And I was like, I bet he does, because that's like $100 mm-hmm. he doesn't get. That's insane. Yes. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's cool, though. That's what a grift. I guess, that's amazing.
I guess it's a grift. I guess you're the, I mean, you're the one going to the doctor, so.
I know that I, after that experience, I was like, I'm not going to the doctor. Why would I do that? Why would I waste an hour of my day to talk to a guy in a lab coat for 5 minutes to poke me in the chest when nothing is wrong with me?
There's nothing they know that we can't figure out by trial and error.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
We could get, I could take some amoxicillin. And I could put it in my body and I could fix a problem if I had to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I could take, what's another drug? What's another drug that people use?
I don't know.
It reminds me of the sketch.
My wife is pregnant. So Zofran. When Phoebe was pregnant, she was having trouble.
Don't mess with the Zofran.
she was having trouble keeping food down. And so we were like, oh, this is what happened last time. And what happened was she took Zofran and she was able to keep the nausea. She was able to go from throwing up to nausea so she could actually eat food. And so I called the doctor and said, Zofran is not over the counter. You got to go get it prescribed. I called the doctor. Hey, I need a prescription for Zofran. They were like, we need to see your wife in person. The next appointment is in 2 days. And I was like, my wife can't keep food down today. I know what the solution is. Can you write a script real quick? And I'll just go to CVS. They have it there, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And it was like a big thing. They finally figured out how to do telehealth, but they got to like talk to you. They got to do an intake form. It's a big mess. It's so silly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually like not that upset about that process at all. I know you're upset because it inconvenienced you and your wife, which is the thing that you care about in the moment.
Yeah.
But
on the whole,
making it so that you have to see a doctor to get medicine prescribed to you is probably a good thing.
I found a solution, and the solution was it was telehealth. Telehealth is a miracle. That's so great. Well, having to set an appointment for an emergency is really silly.
You don't schedule your emergencies?
No, I don't. In fact, but they try
Seems like you need to work on your time management skills.
No, the process of getting drugs was not the problem. The fact that it's the problem is the clinical gaze, right? We know more than you, but it's like the clinical gaze.
Are there not any straight people that work there?
No, all hospital people are. It's all just hospital a whole people like boys.
Hospital people.
All hospital people. Doctors, nurses, RNs, CNAs, MBCs.
Security guards.
Yeah, all of them.
Okay.
No, it was the clinical gaze is Foucault, Michel Foucault.
Oh, yeah. We all know about him and what he's done for
Talk about a clinical gay. All right.
Yeah, right. I'm sure that's really funny to the six people that have read Foucault out there.
That who know who Michel Foucault is.
Yeah.
he was an awful person. But anyway, he talked about, he's a philosopher. He talked about the look that a doctor gives you is like you're a car in a shop.
Yeah.
You know? Not that you're a human being. And so it's, you know, the we know more than you about yourself is the attitude. And so like that frustrates me. You're probably right. Getting prescription drugs, it should not be a simple process.
It shouldn't
However,
be a cakewalk. Yeah.
There should be some kind of mechanism in place where it's like, hey, this is a problem. I know the solution. Can we just fix it? And the solution is telehealth, which is nice.
Telehealth is nice.
It was like $40 and your appointment, never mind. It's not a big deal.
Your whole experience makes me think of the SNL skit with Will Ferrell where he like comes in. He's like, turn your head and cough again. He's like, doctor, come in here. Turn your head and cough. And they're like going. And eventually there's like three doctors with the hand down there. And he's like, he's making him cough over and over again. And then the real doctor comes in and says, who are you people? And they say, the jig's up, run. it's a really good sketch.
And it's really funny.
Yeah, that's what it makes me think of. It's like you just got harassed by some guy in a coat. When you were in there, and then he left.
Or the Monty Python sketch where they bring a bunch of like lab equipment in for her to give birth, and she's like, oh, I think I'm ready to push, and she and he goes, you're not qualified to make that decision.
That is funny, man. Yeah. What do they know? What do these doctors know, man? They go to school for so long. All they know is eat hot chip and lie. They don't know anything.
Charge their phone. All they know charge is take their exam. Phone.
Yeah, they take exam. They use amphetamine. They eat hot chip.
If you have a PhD in medicine, you're not. You're that's patreon.com/thrive.
100% right. If you 100%, if you have a PhD you can in medicine, it,
all right,
and you've paid off all of your student loans.
No. Even if you're not paying off, even if you haven't paid them off yet, even if you're 1.5 mil in the hole, which that's conservatively estimating it.
If anyone out there, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, I'm going to speak for both of us. I'm going to override. I'm going to use my annual override and say, if you're $1.5 million in debt, please don't give us any money on Patreon unless you're a billionaire and it's like part of the thing that you're in debt. That
you're
much.
Over-leveraged. You're over-leveraged. Yeah.
If you're properly leveraged, if your debt to income ratio is square, fine, come on down. But if your income is less than $1 million, and you're in debt $1 million, please don't.
So there's a Franciscan hate Facebook group that I'm a part of.
You talk about it a lot.
On here.
Well, I guess maybe to me, I've heard about it.
Yeah. I don't think you're in it. I know. I don't think you made it in.
Yeah.
But someone was complaining about the amount of debt they were in.
Oh.
And it was a lot. They had 140 in debt for a theology degree. And that's difficult. That's like really hard to do. First of all, Franciscan costs 30 a year. So how you manage to get more than $120,000
in debt bad is beyond me.
It's beyond like that. You paid more than you should have for the school. How did you get there? You know, and then her parents took out $140,000 on her behalf in addition to the federal loans.
Dude,
what were you doing? At what point? But like that's the thing is like when you're that young you don't understand. Part of me feels bad mm-hmm. like you got fleeced. But another mm-hmm. part of me is like you're complaining about the wrong people because the college didn't make you do that.
No, you know? Nobody made you do it. I saw a video that was talking about millennial writing, especially specifically in video games, about how like when they could say, you know, go over here and get the fuel canisters so we can fuel up for the next mission. But instead they say, hey girl boss. It's so we can take a break from totally shooting those guys over there, which is so painful, by the way, because I'm so strong. We need to go pick up some radical, you know, they do the whole ironic, you know, that thing. And one of the things, there was like a game that came out recently where the characters were complaining about student loan debt. And the guy made the argument that like millennials just don't know how to be like politically engaged, and so they just complain about student loans. Like that's their path, that's their angle. They say capitalism and then they say student loans, and that's all that they have to contribute to the conversation.
That's all they got. That's really funny. That's accurate. I know you're right. Like and Gen Alpha and Gen Z don't get it.
No.
Gen Alpha looks at it,
they're like, why did you do this thing that everybody universally agrees has been bad? Like you knew it was bad and then you did it anyway. And now you're complaining to all of us about it. But we just looked at it and we said, that looks like a bad idea. And then we didn't do it.
No one. I watched the video like if you're on the 10-year repayment plan, get off of it as quickly as you can. If no one's told you this, don't do the 10-year repayment plan. They're charging you interest now on money on that you have not accrued. Pay off the principal first. I say this because I watched the video.
Dave Demsey.
I watched the video. No, they make you watch a video before you take out federal loans. Did you watch the video?
I didn't watch anything.
They make you watch a video and it's like,
I think I skipped
video
through it.
Before you borrow money. I watched the video and it said, oh, this is a 10-year repayment plan. And it showed what the amortization schedule was, which is what your dollar is actually going towards. And they put your money over on a time horizon and they're like, okay, if you pay off this in 10 years, it's going to accrue this much interest. We're going to charge you the interest first, which should be a crime. I think.
It's how.
But
it's how
you agree
work.
To it. You yeah. Yeah, but like. Anyway, they charge you $20 a month when you get out of school, and then you're like, "Oh, that's cool. I'm paying off it. I'm going to pay double." But when you're paying double, you're not paying on the principal. You're paying on, again, interest that you have not accrued and is you do not have to pay because you've not accrued the interest. But they don't teach you this. And no. Well, they do. They give you a video. And so part of me is like, I'm sorry that you were fleeced, but there was a video. Like,
yeah,
they did make you watch it. They told you what they were going to do. It sucks that they did it, but yeah, anyway. So part of me feels bad, but another part of me is like, there was a video.
No, not even a video, just like copious amounts of information available all the time, everywhere. Like from 2008 onwards, basically, there was no excuse for you to get into massive student loan debt, you know? Because it's like,
because there was a lot of stuff around.
A lot of stuff around. Before then, I could understand how someone might be tricked because the economy is great and it's always been great and it's always going to be great. A lot of people lost a lot of money because they thought that. So like even really smart people. So I'm not, you know, but after 2008, kind of a wake up call, you'd think that everyone would be like, Oh,
debt is not
debt. Not the best.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I shouldn't do that. You know?
Yeah. But
why
some
are we
people
talking
don't
about
know
loans?
Why the recession happened. This is.
Are we talking about student loans? Are we talking about student loans?
We're talking about student loans because millennials like complaining about them.
No, it was you mentioned student loans and then I brought up the millennial thing. I don't even know why you brought it up. You're talking about Franciscan and the Facebook group and
right. No, but we mentioned doctors. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Ah, nuts. We're way off track here.
Who cares?
I've just been thinking about it recently because I've been thinking about
being a doctor.
No, yeah, that's my new thing. Medical school. Do you think they'll let me ultra learn my way into medical school?
Yeah, you don't understand. It's okay. I'm gonna actually do all of my medical school in one semester, so that I can get it done really fast, and then I can focus on my content career in the second semester. Patrick Nivy, 2025.
That's me.
That's you.
No, I've been thinking about ownership, and anyway. I've been thinking about something that you said triggered this for me.
What did I say? I don't say anything.
I don't remember. No, it was we were talking before the podcast about debt in terms of like mortgages and property.
Yeah.
And I was reading a book the other day.
Mm-hmm. Good.
About property, and it talked about the body as property. And I thought that was interesting because usually Catholics don't talk about the body as property because that makes us feel like we're pro-choice and my body, my choice. But it was cool. I don't know. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Okay.
So this guy, DC Schindler, was talking about how the body is not only property, but is the archetype of all property. And when you own something, it is analogous to your body. So your soul gives life to your body. And when you purchase something or when you grow an ownership of it, you imbue a part of yourself into it and you like fully change it.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
And the way that Americans think about property, the way that Catholics think about property, and the way that Americans think about property is different. The way that Americans think about property is, this phone is just a bunch of things. It's a bunch of glass and metal. Mm-hmm.
Metal and objects. Yep. It's materials.
Yes.
Yeah.
Until, gears. And distractions. Until I give it meaning. Until I I take it out of the void. And now it's in my sphere of influence and I'm controlling it. But a Catholic sees a thing that has an end in and of itself that I then put myself into. So like an American sees like, oh, this is public land and I'm going to use it and I'm going to take it and I'm going to section it off and now it becomes private. Whereas a Catholic sees it kind of in the opposite, where now that a thing is owned, it can be public facing. Like it can actually be a part of human society in a way that it couldn't be before. Like an unforested land is not part of society, but once a human being takes it and prepares it and cultivates it, then it's part of human society. It's kind of given a soul of its own. I just thought that was interesting because that's not how Americans think about property on the left or the right.
I mean, is it not how American, like if an American builder was to buy 100 acres of land and turn it into houses, is that not taking something and then like turning it back over, making it private and then turning it, preparing it and then turning it back over to the public?
No, and like in the very act of developing it, like before it's unforested land, right? Yeah. It has an end in and of itself, right? It's a bunch of natural things that are doing their thing. The trees are growing, the squirrels are running around, and it is not part of society. You know, it's not part of. It doesn't have a human. It doesn't have It's not really public because it doesn't. It's not a part of us. Mm-hmm. But then once we claim it and we start building on it, it does have an effect on society because even when they're building it, it's not private because like the construction is affecting the neighbors and it's the city has to be, you know, redrawn because it's a property that's outside the boundaries. So there has to be utility and all this stuff. It's like, it doesn't matter who owns it. It's just now it is part of the public. Mm-hmm. And I think when Americans think of property, we think of, oh, like this thing is now not in the public. It's private. And so I can do whatever I want with it. And that has like ramifications for how we view our bodies, where it's like, this is not a public thing. It's a private thing and I can do whatever I want with it. Whereas the Catholic view is your body is actually a very public thing and it does matter. It's actually the most public thing because it's the public representation of you. And so it does matter what you do with it.
I am my body, you know, like I'm not like my whole body, you know?
Yeah.
Like if you take
my hand.
And your
body isn't wholly you.
If you take my hand and you put a pirate ship down there and you eventually replace all my body parts with pirate ships, eventually I'm not me anymore.
This is a great representation of the ship of Theseus.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. I think the body, because we're supposed to share all things in common. And so I think that is why Americans get really spooked out whenever there's every communist gobbledygook or when people lean into maybe the more traditionally leftist aspects of Christianity. It's like, you mean I have to share my stuff with other people? You mean that like I need to pay off the debts of others? You mean I need to help widows and orphans and feed the hungry with not my excess, but my out of my poverty, I have to help other people? That doesn't seem right. But that's the whole I think that's why we get so wigged out by a lot of things, is like we feel very entitled to all of this because of the American perspective. But then when it comes time to actually live Christianity, it's such a baseline definition of property is mine and mine to dictate what to do with it, that there's no understanding of public property that's not owned by a public entity such as the government.
Yeah.
You know, like it's weird for Americans to understand that there is public property that's owned by private persons, you know,
unless that's it's almost a park that's
owned by a foundation. That's basically like, you know, like that's the only thing people are like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But if you say that about someone's home or about their yard or about their car or about their money, they're like, no,
that's impossible.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And yeah, I struggle with it too. I don't want to give away my stuff. This is my glass and gears and materials. You don't get to have this, you know?
And I don't think it's a conception of like, I think the American conception is a construction. It's something, it's a way that we have constructed the world to work. Like property and ownership is just a matter of contracts. And I have agreed that this is your house now.
Yeah.
It used to be mine, but I've agreed now that it's yours. And like the contracts should reflect reality, right? I think contracts are fine. But like the way we view property is merely contractual, where like the social contract is that the public has agreed and this foundation has agreed that this park is for public use. And like that's why we can use it. Otherwise, it would be trespassing, you know, whereas like, it just makes sense that actually a really great example would be like, is it against the law for a dog, your neighbor's dog, to poop in your yard?
It's against the law of my house, brother. How about like is it against the law for me to pump your dog full of hot lead for taking a dump on my yard?
We understand that trespassing is like a bad thing, right?
Yeah,
but if someone's dog poops on your lawn, one of two things is going to happen. One,
I shoot the dog.
I'm going to trespass to pick up the poop. But that's understood to be like an okay thing.
Yeah.
So there's an element of public good to your yard. We even see this with like homeowner associations where you can't do whatever you want with your property because there's some kind of public good.
An even more extreme example is a few months ago, they were working on the street or the house across the street. And the guys were using some kind of saw, I think maybe to cut concrete or rebar or some type of material with it, with their saw. And sparks kicked up and it lit my neighbor's yard on fire.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So there's just a bunch of dudes like taking off their jackets and like smacking the yard. And like Ray walks by the door and she just sees smoke and flames like out her front door. And she's like, what is going on?
And then, and then your neighbor comes out like, man, everybody's working from home nowadays. Uh-huh. He's a firefighter.
He's a firefighter. He called it in. He recognized that it was beyond his, he didn't have the tools, you know, the garden hose wasn't going to get it done. He was worried that it was going to go into the forest next to our houses, and thankfully it didn't. But it's like all of a sudden, like if the workers from across the street were just on your yard smacking the ground with their jackets, you'd be like, stop that, get out of here. But since there was a fire and it was like, oh, this is bad, let's all help. You don't think about it at all because it's like there's a public good here, like you said, which is this yard not being on fire.
Anymore. We all kind of understand that it's a good thing that someone's house is not on fire, especially when they live three doors down from you.
Yes.
You know? So we're all kind of okay.
Band.
With...
I walked one into the dark side of troubled mind. I left my body somewhere in the sands of time. Oh, man. You know that one?
Yeah. Body line. Oh boy,
man, Three Doors Down, what are they up to? We should DM them on Twitter. What are you guys up to?
We should DM them on Twitter. I can DM Eve6 on Twitter.
Hey, let me know, let us know on in Discord if we should have Three Doors Down on the podcast, the band
Eve6,
with Eve6 guest featuring
the guy who sang, what did he sing again, what song did he write?
I've never heard of that person in my life.
You never heard of Eve Six?
No.
He wrote Steve a song Six. That was pop. He wrote a song that was popular in the 90s.
Oh.
It was one song, and someone was like, the guy who wrote The Rich Men North of Richmond. They were like, this guy wrote Eve one Six. Song, and then this guy wrote one song and then left. And the Eve Six guy tweeted, "Hey, I think we should take it easy on Gingers who can't write a second hit."
That's true. Let's see here. Inside
Out. Tender Heart in a Blender. Yeah, tender Heart in a Blender. I'll just spin around to a beautiful pavilion. Rendezvous, then I'm through with you. That song.
I don't know about Eve Six, and I refuse to learn. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, so public property good.
Yeah, public good. Yep.
I think it's just that these obvious examples kind of illustrate the American conception of property is a little bit of a fiction, you know, this understanding mm-hmm. of and the fiction, the art is imitated in our life. Like we assume that because this is the way that stuff works, this mm-hmm. must be the way that the first stuff works. This is I'm stuff. Because John Locke was like, yeah, the body is the first right. It's your first property. It's the first thing that you own. And so this is what property is. It's this primordial ooze that you take and you form into something. It's nothing, and then you form it into something. And then you therefore own it because you transformed it. And that's kind of what God did. So it's kind of making mm-hmm. man God, right? Because we don't take nothing and turn into something. We take something and turn into something else. And that development is an important human action. But like what he doesn't talk about, like he talks about like bringing it into the self, like bringing the thing is then your borders are being extended to. Like M.H. Williams' borders are being extended to this subdivision. Whereas the way that the Christian mind understands it is instead of the thing being brought into you, it's you being brought out of yourself mm-hmm. and you leave your mark on this thing. And that's kind of how that's kind of how we see when you make stuff. If you've experienced this, my dad used to make signs. My dad used to shred sick tricks at the park. He would come out of himself by
doing handstand kickflips. Yeah. Insane. Yeah. I guess it would be more of a punch flip if he was on punch his flip. Hands.
But yeah. He would point at the signs he made. He used to make signs, and he made all the signs for like a bunch of subdivisions, and he would be like, that's my sign. Because that's like, this is a piece of me. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a piece of me in this, and it's unremovable. I think it's why when you move apartments, like I have, even though you didn't own it, you leave, and you kind of feel like you're leaving a part of yourself because this is a thing that you've imbued meaning into, that like you've kind of put yourself in. What are you doing? He's sending me a she blank on my blank till I blank joke.
I just had to get it out. It was in me, and it had to, much like the expression of a Christian, I had to come out of myself. That joke is
whatever.
Me.
And so I think that this Lockean understanding of property,
yeah,
is kind of, it seeps into our own understanding of ourselves, and we're like, oh, my body is this blank thing that I can choose what to do and what it means and how to use it. And I think that's just clearly that's a clear root of a bunch of problems that we have, is we have a bunch of people mm-hmm. who believe they can do whatever they want with their bodies, yeah. and that manifests itself in many right. different ways.
Yes.
You can think of many of them right now without me
both
having to name them.
Conservatives and liberals, Christians and non-Christians, believe that they can do whatever they want with their body, and that's like at the yeah. core of what they believe. Instead yes. of, I guess the Christian alternative is that in this context, like because my body was given to me, I have an obligation to do with it what is right, you know? And that's like a whole other, that's like a virtue-based mm-hmm. system of belief, which I think a lot of people would look at you like you had three heads if you proposed that that's how you should live.
Yeah. So, and the conception of like giving yourself to another person in marriage or like ownership of your children, like the property, viewing another person as property then, right? Is like when we say that in America, we immediately
we've done that in our history.
And the way, and it makes sense that the human ownership came after a Lockean conception of property.
Right.
Like chattel slavery came, I think, afterward. I got to check me on that, but.
Yeah, I've got John Locke's Wikipedia page pulled up. He was in and around in 1632 to 1704.
Okay.
And slavery, they don't have a specific one for chattel slavery, like how you were talking about it. But because slavery's been around for a long time, so it's not like,
oh yeah, slavery's been around forever, but like the spike of the transatlantic slave, the Atlantic slave trade was peak from the 1700s and on, or the 1600s and on. So around that time, the explosion of slavery happened around this time that we saw bodies and stuff as things that we took and molded according to our own will, instead of things that have being outside of us that we then impose. That not imposed, but then we imbue our souls into as kind of an extension of self. I don't know if you remember this from The World Beyond Your Head, but he talked about the hockey stick or tools.
I've never read The World Beyond Your Head.
Oh, it's a good book.
Yeah.
If you want to get started with post-liberalism, I think The World Beyond Your Head is a really great book to start with. Because the big thing about post-liberalism is like understanding the real, like having a politics or a worldview that's based on what's true instead of what you think is true. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's kind of the main point that the politics of the real D.C. Schindler guy was trying to make. He's like,
yeah,
we have this conception of property that's not real. Mm-hmm. Instead, we should view things as real. As they really are. That. Our law should reflect what's real. Because most political theories nowadays are like, we should have a world that has no classes. We should have a world. I don't want to go to class. We should have a world that is classless, a classless society. Or we should have a world with no government. It would be great if everyone just like was cool all the time. You know, like modern political philosophies, like in when you talk to a high schooler who's like really into politics, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He'll be like, everyone should just, the government should just stay out. We should just mind our own business and we should form our own like little communities and,
you know, communism hasn't been tried.
Exactly. They'll either be a super communist or a super libertarian. And they're like, I figured it out. Like everyone has been wrong this whole time. And this is how the world really works. They'll come up with this like conception of the world. And it's just not real. Like when I was a kid, and I thought, if we're in a deficit, why don't we just print more money?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. That's what they did. That is more real than other things, because that's really what happened. But it's fun to be naive when you're in high school. It's fun to think that you have it all figured out. And then you as a parent, you just get to watch them. You get to watch them crumble under the weight of their expectations, be destroyed by the world and its sinfulness and brokenness.
You do got to make sure they become libertarians, because you never want someone to be like, I'm a communist, so I think we should have like a strong-armed leader that tells us exactly how to do, you know?
Like, you don't want your kid to be that guy. Have you seen that meme of that guy who's like sitting at the library and he just has like five Nazi books stacked up and he's wearing like a dark jacket and he's like studying them and he looks all stressed out? You know what I'm talking about? You don't want your kid to be that guy.
Reading a book about Hitler but shaking my head so everyone knows I disagree.
he was definitely in agreement with what he was reading.
Yes, this is exactly.
He's like, yeah, okay, yeah, man. And then he like gets to the part where they lose and he's like, no, and he slams the table. He's all mad.
Never saw it coming.
No, how did this happen? Taylor, put the gun down. No, don't do it.
No, you had so much to live for. They would have taken it easy on you if you had just walked that bit like, hey, come on. Adolf Hitler, do you have anything to say in your defense? Hey, come on.
Adolf Hitler comes out of the bunker and does like a gym face to the camera. Like, yep, come on. He got me. Oh, Hitler. You did really bad, man. You shouldn't have done that. Anyway. Shoot. I agree with a lot of your points. There was something I was going to say, but I forgot what we were on before we started talking about Nazis, communism, property, extreme, naive. Yeah, you should be rooted in the real. And I think that's true for, like, I think if people live that way, all the way around. And if you just like stop to think about, I think this would help a lot of anxieties too about like the world, like what's real? What do I really know right now? And what is in my imagination? What is like, what is my body reacting to that is imagined or has not proven itself to be true? And then from there, it's like, okay, I know, like, I think that my boss is going to be mad at me. Okay, well, you don't know that your boss is going to be mad at you. So why don't you just do the thing that you're going to do? Or, oh, I think I'm not going to be any good at this thing. Or I think that she's not going to say yes when I ask her out. Like, if you take that whole idea of, like, the politics of the real and expand it, and you just, and you know that God is real and that Jesus Christ is real, then, like, everything can kind of flow from that, you know? So it's actually a nice little, nice little thing. This DC Schindler guy.
Yeah.
He seemed to know what he was talking about. I understand he made a list of all of his best ideas.
Different Schindler. Different Schindler. Schindler's list is also not a list of ideas.
Sorry? I thought it was like a grocery butter.
So did
eggs.
You think that Schindler's list was like Martin Luther's 95 theses, but for like Jewish people?
Martin Luther's 95 theses was the 95 reasons why America should get rid of
Martin Luther's 95 theses.
Segregation.
Martin Luther's 95 theses were the 95 cardinals that made Martin Luther kill himself. Is that what it was?
95 reasons why. It's a show in the style of 13 Reasons Why, but it's about Martin Luther.
I had 14 That's reasons why, good. But your thing is cool too, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
I know it's a meme where like someone's like the earth is 4 billion years old and someone's like, well, I'm 4.1 billion years old, but that's cool too, I guess.
That's funny.
Anyway, I know it's really bad, and I probably shouldn't say this on the podcast, but
here we go.
The thing where it was like 13 reasons why, and then you show like a thing and then they edit it to say 14 reasons why. I thought that was really funny.
That is funny. I think things can be funny.
I think if you can write a best-selling book for children about a girl killing herself and it's cool, you can make jokes about that book.
What book is this?
13 Reasons Why.
Oh, I thought it was a show. I thought it was a television program.
No, first it was a book that was aimed towards middle schoolers about a cool high school girl who kills herself because all of her friends are mean.
Yeah. Imagine if it's just my Diary of a Wimpy Kid, but it just takes a crazy turn in the last like 10 pages.
Hey, Manny. In the laundry room.
I think, yeah, that actually would be a crazy thing. Like it's one of those, it's like you pick it up, oh, it's like a kid's book, and it just slowly gets darker and darker as it goes on. Jeff Kinney, don't do that, please.
Diary of a Wimpy Kid, but like it's slowly, it's like it's hinted but not directly revealed that Greg's parents are getting a divorce in the background.
Yeah, and that Greg is developing schizophrenia and that Roderick is on heroin. You know, like just a bizarro dark world. That would actually be really sad because it's one of the, it's like when they release the IP for like a beloved character and everyone instantly makes like porn and horror movies out of it. And it's like, well, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's not what
we shouldn't
want.
Do this. Diary of a Wimpy Kid can be nice and pure. Yeah. And Greg can stand over the vent with his mom's bathrobe on and it will be warm and it will be nice. And we all thought that that was a pretty cool thing when we first read it. If we're being honest with ourselves, you know,
it is definitely cool. We don't have those.
I need to add, I have a list on my phone of potential gift ideas because every year Christmas comes around and my in-laws are like, what do you want? And I never know, but I need a big bathrobe.
Do you want to know what I'm getting for my birthday this year? I'm very excited.
I have a lot of things on the list
to get for my birthday.
Yeah. What do you want?
No. I don't want this from you. I'm already getting this. I think my mom and my wife are tag teaming on getting this gift for me.
Okay.
I'm getting a kit for making mead.
Mead?
Mead.
Wow.
You ever have mead?
Every guy is the same.
Every guy is the same.
Every guy just wants to make a beverage in his bathtub. That's what every guy wants at the end
of
the
day. I want to distill my own alcohol is what I want to do.
That's pretty cool.
So all my friends have like a different hobby. Like my friend Michael, not that Michael, the other Michael. My friend Michael makes like, he's got like mango trees in his backyard. He's got a bunch of fruit. My friend Alec, he grows peppers and he makes his own hot sauce and it's awesome. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I am going to be the mead guy. Me and Michael are going to establish some kind of barter system. What's I don't know. Thing? Your thing is like podcasts. Difference. I mean, my friends like locally, like we were trying to establish like a local economy.
Like your real friends.
Like a barter system.
Like your real friends that you care about.
No, we're really friends. Yeah, I've known you longer than I've known these yahoos.
All I have to offer you is a podcast. You don't want any of my other wares?
Into my wares? No, you're the woodworking guy, but other Michael is also the woodworking guy too.
Yeah, I guess. I don't really work wood. I cut it and then I attach it to walls mostly. That's kind of all I do.
You're working on it. That's how you get started. True. You get little projects going. But anyway, so Michael is going. We're going to set up some kind of bartering system where mm-hmm. I give him mead in exchange for him giving me the dried fruits to make the mead. So I'm going to make the mead with the dried. So mead is like a honey wine. You put about 3 pounds of honey, it'll make like 4 bottles of mead. And so I'm going to make a mead.
And then you squish the mangoes with your feet. Is that right?
Yeah. It's they actually pay you extra if you don't wash them.
Yeah, I want your foot alcohol. Actually, take out the mangoes. Just distill whatever
whatever comes out of there. But no, I'm really excited because you don't actually need fruit. You can just do it with wine and water and or honey and water and yeast, which is crazy. But I want to like do like a mango summer wine. You know, like a summer mead. Sorry, it's all mead,
but it's made of aged.
I don't have a barrel. It's going to be aged in a plastic jar. Is what's going to happen.
Is it a plastic or is it a jar?
It's a plastic jar.
I think necessitates glass.
I don't think so because you can have jars of peanut butter that are made of plastic.
Define jar. Okay, I typed it wrong, and I typed in jarf. And it came up with a horrendous Urban Dictionary definition.
I cannot.
When a man blank blank another man without permission, or when a woman using a blank or a blank 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 without permission. That's what the so.
Oh, nobody gosh.
Look. Yeah, nobody look up. We have to end the show. We need to get out of here.
So I don't understand. Does the blank have to be made of glass?
No. I just wanted to know if a jar. I didn't need to know about that. Man,
Urban Dictionary is so.
Yeah, they really fake. Are.
It's so it not real. It's yeah, a Urban it's Dictionary a is Urban Dictionary we... is a website for middle schoolers to like make each other laugh and science.
Yeah. Fun. Yes, it's like, hey, look up what Kyle means on Urban Dictionary. You'll never believe it. And it's like you put it in the day before.
Yeah.
Everybody, we have a dating podcast we do every Wednesday. It's called Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner. We answer your questions. So if you have a question about your dating life, or you need some advice, or maybe your friend needs some advice, or maybe your mom needs some advice, we don't discriminate. You can go to bit.ly/crunchdiscord. You can navigate your way to the Dating Corner channel. If you can't do that, you're old, #bald, plus L plus ratio. Don't figure out Discord if you can't figure it out. Go to the Dating Corner. Submit your question. We'll talk about it on the show, and we'll give you all the advice that you need.
Very exciting.
So that's what we do. Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
You guys are actually our property. So that just because you've listened to this podcast, we own you now. You're welcome.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We will be praying for you, and we will see you all next time. Threw a little spice in there.
Yeah, man.
All right.
It's time for Dune.
Yes.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
while the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.